football is life. And that's why we're here to talk to you about Ted Lasso Season 2, now airing on Apple TV+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by a stellar crew of football aficionados. Kathy Campbell is here. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, I'm here. Don't you fret, Boba Fett.
Welcome to A Complicated Profession, a podcast where we talk about soccer. Chip Southworth is also here. Hi, Chip.
You know it, coach.
Also joining us, Kelly Gamont.
I'm going to need two more of these right away.
And finally, in his, I think, second appearance on Football is Life, it is Tom Bridge. Welcome back, Tom.
Jan is Dutch. He's not rude.
Not now, Jan. We are here to talk about Season 2, Episode 1 of Ted Lasso, entitled Goodbye, Earl. I'll do a very sad. Everyone can take a moment, shed a tear, and then we must persevere. I will attempt a quick summary of this episode, and then we'll dive in and talk about it a little bit more. So we pick up with the team in a tie, and we learn it's their like seventh consecutive tie of the football season. Dani Rojas lines up a shot, and it seems to be this will be the shot that gets Richmond their match. Except, unfortunately, the team mascot breaks loose, and Danny kills it by kicking a soccer ball into it. He is understandably a little bit upset. We get a little bit more of stuff filled in here as we see Ted give a press conference in which he talks about the game and the season and the dog's death. We learn that Roy is no longer there and that we learn that, you know, they've had an interesting season so far. Danny is quite bothered by his murder of the dog and is suffering in the shower.
I don't think it's murder because it was not on purpose. So
involuntary dog slaughter?
Yeah. Yes.
There's some dispute amongst the coaches about whether or not they're unlucky and what's going on. Basically, in the end, in order to sort of get things, get Danny over this hump, Higgins suggests bringing in a sports psychologist, which they do, Dr. Sharon Fieldstone. And she ends up basically seeing Danny and getting him over his hump so that he can get back to being a great football player like we know he is. But there's a little bit of friction between Ted and the new doctor because they have different approaches. Meanwhile, in the B plot, Rebecca has a new suitor that she is very interested in, and she goes out on a double date with Keely and Roy. And everything seems fine, except then Roy basically lays down the hard truth, saying that he's fine, but she needs somebody better than that. She needs somebody who she's really excited about, who's wonderful. And as a result, she ends up breaking things off with him so that she can explore the possibility of finding somebody that she's wonderful that she's supposed to be with. And in our C plot, Roy is now coaching under nines girls football basically has been courted to be a pundit for Sky Sports. Doesn't really feel interested in doing that. Keely kind of tries to talk him into it, but he's very happy in his coaching his kids team as well as spending time with his yoga moms and watching reality TV featuring none other than Jamie Tart. And that is the super high overview of this episode. So
good night, everybody.
Good night. Thanks for tuning in. We've made it pretty fast. Anybody else, anything they want to bring up? What you particularly like?
Okay, I just have to say this right now. The women characters in this show are amazing, which is not something you would expect to say with a show about football. I love how they're written. I love that they have the ability to be complex and have these, you know, conversations, girl, listen, like interactions with the male characters that are obviously they're supporting and validating. But then when the therapist comes in and she's just incredible too, like I just, Rebecca and Keely forever best people
They are the best.
Yes.
I would also say that I was immediately smitten with Dr. Sharon. The introduction that she makes there, where essentially, you know, Ted and the other staff are kind of goofing, and she's just not having it. And she knows that she's there for a reason. And she's going to say, she just straight up asks Ted, "Are you good at your job?" And, you know, finally evinces a yes from him. And then she said, in probably one of the most baller moves of all time, that she's twice as good.
Yeah. I like that she's like, "I believe you," you know, like, it's very affirmation, right?
And too, at the end of that interaction, as she leaves, she asks, instead of just saying, you know, "Screw you, I'm going to leave. Obviously, I know I'm amazing. Bye." She still takes that moment to pause and say, "Okay, so what's your record?
Yeah,
what's your record?" Which, like, she's obviously aware of whatever levels and presentation she has to be to come into this situation. I'm sure she's had way worse receptions from coaches before. But she knows how to, like, lay down the law and be like, "Look, I'm freaking awesome," and deal with it. And yet still is able to be a human and know that she can have that interaction with people.
We almost got to add a swear ledger entry there.
I will say, in a funny moment,
Kathy almost owed me a pound.
that I mentioned in a tweet, the number of their record is the same as the amount that Roy owes Phoebe. They're both 1,236, which must be a reference to something, but I don't know what.
Well, yo, as a matter of fact, he said as he pushed his glasses up his nose.
Do tell.
In the year 1236, King Henry the...
So, my wife, Shannon, who has been on Football is Life before, did some digging, and there's sort of these angel number things out there, and supposedly the numbers 1,236, whatever, is a number that is popularly conceived as a number having to do with love and harmony.
Huh.
Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Now, some sort of numerology thing, whatever, you know, are we meant to take that seriously? No, but we get that number in the presence of Roy and Keeley, and then just to have it with as a tossed off number for their little game of paper volleyball or whatever. It's kind of a nice hat tip to the whole thing that this show is all about, relationships and how people have relationships with each other.
And the harmony, I love that idea of, you know, Keeley and Roy being the love part, and then harmony with that whole interaction with everyone involved, especially since we've seen it's not very harmony related. Nate's that could being not the, you know, kind, gentle Nate that he was before. Ted feels kind of disconnected. Everyone else, you know, crossed their fingers at the beginning and he just had his hands in his pocket. Like, so many layers in this are really, you know, it's a really great first episode of the season, I think.
Yeah, I loved what they did in terms of, you know, framing for Ted. I mean, if we look at how Ted is shot throughout this episode, I mean, obviously we end on essentially the Godfather shot, right? Like, he is essentially Kay and Sharon is Michael there at the end
closing
of the episode,
the door,
shutting him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are so many places where Ted is on the outside looking in this episode that I feel like, you know, between that and, you know, obviously what's going to be an insecurity-laden arc for Nate this season, because it's clear that he's feeling, you know, he's trying to establish himself, and I expect that he's trying to establish himself out of a place of, you know, insecurity, being the new coach, being the new guy, and he's essentially leading from that side of things.
Because he was low-key brutal in this episode more than one time.
It was funny because I was watching this with my wife, and we're talking about the character she loves. I'm like, well, I mean, who does you love? And she's like, I don't know, Nate's kind of pissing me off in this episode. I'm like, yeah. I feel like they're going somewhere with that, though. It's, you know, well, it seems like a setup.
I loved the shared looks between Ted and Beard. Around that, I feel like there's a lot there that they clearly see something is wrong, and I'm very intrigued to see how they deal with it, because I expect that we're going to get something good there.
I think so too. I think that we've always seen that there's a bit of a wickedly funny but dark side to Nate in the first season. You know, the roasting, the making fun of Colin when he gets his whistle. You know, there's something about this guy who's been pushed around, who's been insecure and not confident, who once he finds himself in a position of power and respect, that he starts pushing down the stuff that he was taking. And I think he's going to learn a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a common commentary too, right? On like a lot of people who were picked on as kids who turn around and, you know, pick on other people as adults once they're not in that position anymore. It's fairly common. Maybe he needs an appointment with Dr. Sharon.
Yeah. Well, whether he makes one or not, he definitely needs one way or another. Yes.
No. Oh, then again, you know, it's, you know, he's new at this, you know.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about, I don't know if we should institute a thing where we vote on the MVP of the episode, but to my mind, the MVP of this episode is Roy Kent, who is
hands down. Yep.
First of all, he is an amazing, I love his speech to the coach, especially the bit where he's talking about how they didn't play very well or whatever, except for, I can't remember what the young woman's name is, but it's like, way to put your body on the line out there. And that is the most adorable like child actress I've ever seen.
So with the giant ice pack on her head.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's the best bit.
I love that clearly these kids absolutely adore Roy, and they know that whatever he does is done with love, which is a really important thing when you have, you know, this really big, potentially scary person, anyone watching that interaction as, you know, the teacher does, but also like does the throw off an acceptance of, yeah, they didn't play great. Like it's good. That the recognition that how he coaches is a certain style, but always from a place of love, which I think is really important in this world of toxic masculinity and like being gruff and angry, but also, hey, by the way, she threw her body on the line, and I'm going to take this time to acknowledge and recognize that.
Along those same lines, Phoebe is so proud of herself for getting the red card for elbowing another player in the neck. And the way that Roy expresses his pride in her while he is looking Keely straight in the eyes.
Yes. You know,
this, the writing, the direction, the acting of Brett Goldstein, you know, it's all just perfect.
Another show, a lesser show, would have shot that scene with him yelling at the kids and had them, the reverse shot be them like just terrified kids, right? Because that would have been, there's a beat there where that's funny, but perhaps a little disturbing if you were doing a very like black humor sort of thing. But this show doesn't go there, right? All the kids, as you said, the kids are gung-ho about this, right? They are bought in, and that says a lot. It's a choice that really adds complexity and depth to it.
I spent a minute thinking about how he ended up getting that gig, and like, because I absolutely see why, like, I mean, we know Phoebe is why, but like the how, and you know, of course he's doing it for her, but at some point, you know, somebody in the school or in the soccer league or whatever, like, had to have a conversation about doing this. And it made me wonder for a minute, like for a second, I was like, I hope we get to see that, because it seems like it would be pretty entertaining to find out how he ended up and coaching this particular team. So I do love that he's coaching them, and they were hilarious. I would watch a whole show that's just Roy coaches under nine West London soccer. I mean, he's great.
I think it's his bit at the end, though, you know, after suffering through the double date, you know, repeatedly trying to get his drink. He basically does the, you know, radical honesty, essentially, to Keely and Rebecca. It's like, don't lie. Don't beat around the bush here. You deserve something that's better than this. And I think that speech is a fantastic moment for Brett Goldstein. And it really hits home, I think.
Yeah. It gave me a very Ted... Like, this is Ted's influence on him, not mm-hmm. him thinking it, but him saying it out loud and being super upfront about, like, I am 100% in your corner, and being in your corner means not that guy, you know? And just, like, I could see Ted giving the same sort of, not, he wouldn't sugarcoat it quite the way Roy did, but I think that there's some Ted in there of him being open and honest with Rebecca and being a good friend to her, instead of just like whatever sort of awkward, you used to be my boss and now you date, you know, like you're my girlfriend's BFF. And so like, I'm tolerating you, you know, you're like an in-law. And instead, like, absolutely standing up for Rebecca to herself. And I felt like that was a very Tedly influenced move on Roy's part.
He sets the bar higher than Ted does, though, right? Like, in Ted's conversation with Rebecca, Ted's just like, well, he's, you know, you seem to like him, and he's nice. Fine. He sounds great,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, does he treat you well? Like, that sort of stuff. And I think too, the difference is Ted... Do we know how long Ted's ex-wife and them were together? Like, were they high school sweethearts? Because that kind of seems... that situation. So he still hasn't recovered from that divorce. And here's Rebecca, like, working through this journey of this horrible treatment that she received with her ex-husband and all of the everything involved in that. And the default for her was to turn around and go to somebody that's very safe and protected, and he's fine. And Roy's just pushing her, like, dude, you deserve better than fine.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry, Chip. I think the other thing that to recognize is that John Wingsknight as a character isn't fine. Like, we hear two anecdotes that he tells during that story. The first is him getting into a near fist fight with Martin Short.
Right.
And the second one is yet another near fist fight with a guy at a concert. And I'm just like, does this guy just go around getting in fights with people? I mean, if
those
are your
name
two...
dropping. Both the other one, about to name drop in the second one too when the sound cuts out.
Yeah. I'm feeling a little kinder towards John Wingsknight.
Monday Night Wings Night.
Yeah, at whatever the name of that restaurant was,
PJ Flats.
Yep. PJ Flats.
So I think he is fine, and I think that Roy is damning him with faint praise when he says he's fine, but it's genuine. I mean, he's got some things that the name dropping stories, the shallow soccer fandom, the points against, points in favor, a fairly mature and insightful reaction to getting the email from his dad after Roy Kent's retirement speech, the first time that he gotten a message from his father that didn't have anything to do with anti-immigration sentiment.
The scourge of immigration.
And the way that, for the most part, he seems to pick up on signals from Rebecca, and he is attentive to her. I think they'd actually do a fairly good job of selling that, you know, he's fine, but Rebecca can do better and Rebecca should do better. The other thing I like about that whole plot, A, B, C, whichever, is that you got different levels of supportiveness from Keely, from Ted, and Roy, and they're all good. I mean, Keely's being supportive. She's helping Rebecca get out there. Ted asks the super important question, does he treat you well? Then Roy just sort of elevates it to a whole nother level with what makes you think that he deserves you. You know, I don't know what the story arc for the entire season is going to be. But one of the things that's absolutely happening in this episode, it's not so much a story arc, it's just a series of explorations of how to have adult relationships.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And some of the most adult and thoughtful and nuanced relationships that you ever see on a sitcom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So important to have that information and that layer of being able to show that it's okay to not be okay in the in whatever relationships you're in, romantic and coaching and teams and friendships and all of those things. It's okay to like not be okay with where you're at and to ask for more, and that your value as a person is not necessarily like, oh, who will allow, like, who you are worth more than you probably think that you're worth in a, as you're recovering from whatever trauma that you've experienced. And I love the different layers, because it does take more than just, you know, your friend saying, hey, let's get out there, you know, being able to pick apart that email, but also be able to take that into account that, hey, the fact that you had to pick apart this like text or email or whatever that she received, and oh, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. I don't really know. Like, that says a lot about a relationship.
Yeah. And can we talk for a second about Roy? I mean, we're all here to stand for the soft king. I mean, it seems like that's the case. I mean, Dan wants to call him the MVP, and I'm good with that. Why is he torturing himself with the reality television show he knows Jamie is on?
That was not clear to me that he knew he would be on, or... Yeah, I mean, I gathered probably, but yes.
I don't think he knew that Jamie was going to be on, because they were all talking, like, having been in many wine conversations similar to what was showcased here, that conversation about, oh, I like him, that would have been done the very first time that you see him. This was not, you know, the third time that he was on the show. So whether, you know, Sue or Mary picked which reality show that they were going to watch, this was something that was new for them.
I quibble because I think if he had seen him for the first time, Roy would have had a significantly stronger reaction. Yep.
I don't think 100%. So though, he was with his wine moms,
low-key Roy, like, and he's trying to be low-key because he can't be mad about it and let them see the relationship that he has with Jamie, or they're gonna figure out, they're gonna learn more about who he actually is to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a whole lot of Clark Kent sitting there swallowing so nobody finds out he's Superman. That was my read on
that. Can we have a show of hands? This podcast is very effective. Who actually thinks that Roy would make a good pundit on the TV show? Because,
oh my God, the hand on the censor button.
Yeah, would just be one long beep the entire time. I love him to death, but I don't think that's a job for him.
I don't know, though. I totally think that this is what he's going to end up doing. Yeah. And yes, we've seen that he can control his mouth. Obviously, not all the time, but like he...
You can't control around a 9-year-old girl.
Well, yeah, but that's his
niece. He just chooses not to.
Because, like, he does, you know, when he is working with the other kids, like, he's able, not on the team, but even then, the team, like, he called them pricks, but, like, there wasn't a whole lot of swearing in that, involved in that. But I think that he could be, you know, that hard-hitting pundit or whatever. Yeah.
He's here for brutal honesty. Like, he's never going to sugarcoat whatever it is that the team is doing. And if they suck, he's going to be clear about it.
Part of me thinks it's a head fake, because now that they've dangled it out there, they're going to go in a direction that we don't expect, rather than
entirely
delivering
possible
on the idea. Sure. But I still think he's going to have something more to do with the football and possibly the club than he does right now. Because we've seen a reluctance, right? He doesn't show up at the games. He's not picking up his tickets. Yeah, like there's something there, and we haven't quite explored how he's dealing post-retirement with his relationship, despite his protestations that he loves everything he's doing.
Aside from growing out his hair, we don't really know what he's been up to.
Well, we know that his retirement speech, like, went viral. and, right. you know, was clearly a meme of some kind.
Right.
And I suspect that he's out in the woods because of that speech. I can't wait to see it, because you know they're going to deploy that with comedic effect.
There's three things I think we got in this episode that are the start of a thing for this season. And Roy's speech is one. And John Wing's night down at PJ Flats is two. And this Sky reporting pundit gig thing. I think those are three things we got here for absolute certain that we're going to keep hearing about in one way or another. I absolutely think we have not seen the last of Monday night's Wings Night.
I'm not as convinced on that front. I think that might be the end of that. But I think Rebecca's journey is the overarching plot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think he's going to end up popping up in some weird, unexpected way just because of the very efficient way in which this story was told last season. Mm. And the little things we got in the beginning were things that paid off in the end. And the way, like, Tom, you and I talked on the season one rewatch in episode 9 about how we got some things in the beginning that we got, you know, in a very different format at the end. Like, it was
scenes that
a very
rhyme.
Similar thing. Yeah. Scenes that rhyme. Thank you. That was the part I was trying to remember. And so I think there's going to be something else about him that we're going to see. I think that we are going to end up getting to see Roy's speech somehow or another. And I think the Sky News thing, whether we actually see the Sky News thing, whether he goes and does it and goes down in flames, or it's the initial dangle of an offer that then turns out, you know, like Roy takes a hard left and ends up doing something completely different. Like, that journey is another thing that I think we're being set up for this season, aside from, you know, all the stuff with the club itself and how they do, and are they going to just tie games forever and all of that.
So. I'm just pleased that we have so much to say about Roy Kent after he's left the team. And there's plenty of other stuff to go on in the show, but I think he's right now the most dynamic and interesting character, which is, I guess, why he got the MVP.
Yeah. I mean, this episode introduces a arc in and of itself for Danny, but Danny is a lovable character who is not a very complex character particularly, but right. he delivers
not
on
this point.
Exactly what you kind of know about him, right? Which is he is optimistic and cheerful, and you see what happens when he takes a blow to that. And he's sort of the entry point for, I think, Sharon to come in and potentially have an effect on the rest of the team. Go ahead.
He wasn't entirely rattled, because when he woke up from his nightmare, he was still in bed with two women.
I know.
Well, yeah, strange but detail, just because but you have fun doesn't mean that your trauma is, like,
indeed.
Truly healed.
Right. And we don't know if those... We don't know if that's a standing relationship or not. I just appreciate that... There's one more example of Danny Rojas possibly being a better player than Jamie Tartt.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I'll
done.
Take it. Yes.
I did exceptionally
well played.
I did want to mention, I think, one of my favorite bits of this episode, which is the dynamic of the team post season one. The locker room scene at the beginning of the episode is, I think, fantastic, because you deal with the fallout of the tie and the team, which in last season would have been very dejected, right? And instead, they're all pretty, like, they've bought into the Ted Lasso philosophy, right? Like, they've got the whole thing where he's like, you know, see you on Monday, Goldfish, and they have to explain it to Jan, the new player, who has this brutal moment where everybody is like, and then you're like, no, it's fine. He's just Dutch. And everyone's like, oh, yeah. And, like, just kind of roll with it. There's that. There's the bit where, you know, Danny's in the shower and they're like, maybe you guys can go home and take a shower. Coach, some of us prefer to take a long bath. And they're all like, oh, yeah, I like to take a long bath. You're just like, this is a very different team that we have in front of us than what we had last season. And I think that's the testament to Ted coming into season two.
Mm-hmm. Which I think really sets up the journey that Ted's going on. And the fact that somehow the only therapy interaction that he's had is with his ex-wife's therapist as couple. So I feel like his journey in discovering that therapy can be helpful, I'm really excited to see, and see how their relationship works out, the doctors and his, and and how that lays the foundation for even more potential conversations as an audience to be able to say and look and see, oh, therapy can be helpful. Oh, I can be optimistic and still recognize the hard things, and all of these things that can be so much more than just the television show that we're all watching together.
One of my favorite developments from TV, just generally speaking, and a good show, is when it actually shows therapy as valuable, because it's an incredible tool that everyone should participate in if they're able to. And, you know, I think about the shows where a therapist character has been, you know, and not just like the Sopranos therapist character where we kind of treat it as an exposition tool as well. But, you know, if we look at therapy in The West Wing, if we look at, you know, therapy in other television shows, it's a way of actually expressing that this is actually a normal, awesome thing. And I'm all the way here for that.
Yep.
I think that this is as close as we're getting to a dark side for Ted, the character. You know, we see a put on version of him in some of the promos, the trailers for the season, the upcoming Lead Tasso. But Ted is somebody who's got to fix things. A former a writer I used to respect had her main character talking about. They described the main character as having a saving people problem. and I think Ted's got to be the one to fix things. So the conversation with Beard and him about whether it's the green-eyed monster or not, you know, Ted answers truthfully, but I think that the green-eyed monster is still there.
Yeah,
she is able to in just a few short hours, she's able to reach some of his players in a way that he hasn't yet. She can literally speak to many of them in their own language.
Yeah.
And she was able to reach Danny relatively effortlessly, and he hates that. So how he's going to deal with how he's going to deal with the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy, I think that could possibly be the arc for the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, and he, I don't know if he hates it so much as he just, you know, it is a blow to him because it is the thing that he prides himself on, right? Like, not necessarily he feels bad that she got through to Danny and that Danny is feeling better, just that he doesn't quite understand why he couldn't do the same thing, because in the past, that seems to have worked for him, right? Like, that used to be the thing that he did. So I think there is a very complex and interesting relationship there. I'm not entirely sure what to make of the bit at the end where he tries to, like, wave at her. She just ignores him. And they're like, oh, maybe, you know, she probably didn't see me. She saw you.
She saw you.
She knows who she is. She establishes her boundaries. In working with athletic clubs over the years, she has probably had to establish those boundaries pretty firmly. So I don't see her as dissing Ted or as dismissing or being condescending toward him or any of the others in the office during the during the earlier conversation. Just, she's got a job, she's got a responsibility. Danny is her responsibility, the team is not. There she goes.
I think I will argue, I think there might be an angle of give and take on this as well, where there is something for her to learn from Ted as well. We may see. We don't know enough about her at present to understand that. But given that she seems to be a character who will be recurring, at least in the rest of the season, I suspect that her relationship with Ted may have a bi-directional sort of aspect to it as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really interested to see how it works and how their relationship is developed over the season, and excited to see how it gets handled.
Yeah. I think she's really interesting, and part of it is because right now she's very much that sort of... like, we got sort of a Coach Beard from her. Like, she's pretty inscrutable, but you get a tiny little peek. And, like, anytime you get a tiny little peek at something that you know, when we interact with her, like that moment when she says, "What's your record?" Because she knows there's a record and she wants to know what it is. And whenever we get that moment, that just sort of makes her more interesting because we don't know anything else about her yet. So she's got a whole lot of mystique right now. And I'm going to be very curious to see where that ends up because I want to see more how she's going to interact with everyone else on in a longer period of time, because she's had like two brief conversations with Ted and that's like all we saw. And then, you know, we see her from a distance and she doesn't even talk. Like, she's Boba Fett at this point.
other segments or aspects people wanted to talk about?
I had one quick thing, and it goes back to the scene at the press conference right after the first tie, or the first tie that we see, the seventh tie. Ted tells a story about growing up with a dog named Hank. And if you look at the timeline, he loses his dad and his dog in pretty close order, because he's very clearly saying this is around high school. He loses his dad at 16. Man, that's sad. That hurt. Yeah. Yeah. Like putting that all together, that scene was just, it got really dusty in my house. I really enjoyed the, you know, having that kind of relationship, something put into your life to make you better. That is every pet I've ever had. And as someone with an older cat, maybe not quite 20 years old, like Cindy Crawford was, I worry and was very sad. So
yeah, it's an interesting scene because first of all, I don't think he actually really answers the question, but it's still a great moment where you realize also his rapport with the press room, just like the team has changed, right? You know, they all know who he is. They're all smiling kind of as he tells the story, right? Because they've gotten used to sort of the folksy storytelling and everything. Like, they've kind of adapted to him at this point.
And each other, because you'll notice that when he stands up, we hear Trent Crim and the rest of the room goes,
"The Independent."
And I really appreciated that moment because I just liked we did see significantly fewer reporters in the press room, but all of them there very much sort of know each other and know their deal and all of that. And I liked part of that moment as we were kind of, you know, getting the check-in, you know, with all the different things that we got from last season. Like, you know, one thing that was really funny was Ted in the press room. And so getting to see that that's still a thing that happens and that they're still doing it and all of that was fun to watch as well. I did appreciate that story. I wasn't going to bring it up, but my internet had a problem because as Ted was telling that story, the picture got very, very blurry while I was watching the season premiere.
Yeah, you should look into that.
Yeah,
this section's really buggy. Dust, blurriness. Jeez.
I don't know, man. It was weird. But I did appreciate Ted telling that story. And I also liked a very small moment. Ted gets a text message from Michelle, and it's his son wearing a bunch of ties, which I thought was very, very funny. And I did sort of get a chuckle out of that. And I liked sort of the check there of like, he's still in contact with her. You know, she says your biggest fan thought you would think this was really funny, or, you know, whatever it said. And it was just him wearing a bunch of ties. I didn't get a chance to count to see if it was seven. But
I'm sure it probably was.
Probably. But it was one of those very small moments that I really appreciated, that again, very, very efficient in the storytelling that they're doing, because you get a lot out of that moment. And sort of also like when he walks into the office and Keeley and Higgins and Rebecca are all in there and they all go, "Ted," you know, like he's just walked into Cheers. And it was really nice to see how, just like, you know, us as the audience, that all of them have sort of settled in with each other and gotten comfortable and are kind of figuring things out. And, you know, they were talking about like their personal lives and stuff outside of, you know, what they were doing. Higgins was headed home to watch Empire Strikes Back with the fam and all that. So like those, it was really nice to see that they had very much become like legit work friends and not just, you know, now that we've got the agenda, you know, Rebecca's secret agenda out of the way and all of that. Mm-hmm. Like it was really nice to see how they were actually all just getting along.
Yeah. I also really liked that, even though obviously this is an Apple TV Plus show, you could see the moments, you know, when they're passing phones across or using their phones or whatnot. I liked the fact that it was okay to have the hand in front of the Apple logo. And yes, none of them had cases, but that was okay. And they had conversations about the emoji that came in. And like, it wasn't, our goddess, God, Apple, so shall this be. It was just kind of there. In fact, I've probably seen more Apple commercial style showcases in different TV shows than I did in this
far more obvious branding than I did in this one.
Pretty weird that one time they had the conversation about Rebecca upgrading her iCloud storage, but other than that, I thought it was pretty... 5 gigs is enough for anybody, is what she said.
I want to give a shout out to who I initially would have given the MVP to before you corrected me. That would be Coach Beard, who communicates so much with just a glance.
Yeah.
Brendan Hunt, obviously he's behind the scenes as well as on camera, but he knows his role and he plays it to the hilt. Both as Ted's confidant and as a Greek chorus. You know, the damn it, it does matter if we win back in season one, episode 9, that moment of radical honesty on his part right there. You know, the conversation with Ted in the pub is also really good. You know, the closest thing the show has to an antagonist at this moment is Dr. Sharon, and I don't really consider her an antagonist, just a source of tension that the show is having to work out. I don't know where this thing is going to go for the remaining 11 episodes, but it feels like it came back. You know, it feels like it came back, and it's just warm and funny. It's like it's like a big hug of a television show, even for a show that has an exploding dog in a dream sequence.
Right.
Yeah, that was a brutal scene, but it was hilarious.
It was really funny. I did, one of the things that I appreciated about this was how, for as much as everything for our characters has changed in so many ways, it still feels like the same characters in the same show. And that I feel like is a tough balance sometimes, and you know, with so many things being different now than they were when we left everybody at the end of season one, it was really nice to see that season two was I think we're off to a really good start. I didn't like the dog bit at the beginning. I felt like there could have been a better way for Danny to get the yips, but at least they didn't spend a whole bunch of time on the actual moment it happened, so I felt a little better about it. But it was definitely something I was sort of worried about when it came back, was because of the amount of stuff that has happened to everybody by the time we get to the end of season one, what is season two going to be like? And it was nice that even after all that change, like, the show itself still feels very much the same. And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as Chip mentioned, there are 11 more episodes to go. There's an expanded order this season, which is exciting, which means plenty more episodes of Football is Life to come with this fine panel, as well as many others from across the Incomparable Network. But as I think we're wrapping up here, I will just take the moment to thank our excellent team this week. Kathy Campbell, thank you so much for being here.
All right, I brought orange slices, but don't eat the peels, you animals.
Chip Southworth, always a pleasure.
May the force be with you.
And also with you. Kelly Gamont, thank you for being here.
I need two more of these right away, please.
And Tom Bridge, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. All people are different people, Dan.
Could not have said it better myself, other than, you remember when they added Groucho but not Harpo? It's just not cool. Thanks for joining us. Remember, football is life. We'll be back next week.